Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. Bruce Ash, along with Eb Wilkinson, welcoming you to a special post-Mueller report edition of Inside Track. I think we have a very good show for you today. In the second half hour, Anson Chan will join us. Mrs. Chan is known as the conscience of Hong Kong, leading the democracy movement there against Chinese communist tyranny. She may end up sharing some outcomes from her meeting with Vice President Pence, which she had yesterday, as well as members of the National Security Council. In the first half hour of the show, we'll chat with Federalist contributor, lawyer, George Bardmesser, he's going to talk to us about his most recent article. His March 13th op-ed piece with the Federalist has already been shared by 1.3 million people on Facebook. I mean, it's incredible. And he is funny. I think you're going to enjoy him. First, as always, thank you so much for supporting our great Inside Track sponsors. Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Steel Surplus. That's Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Sorry, Jamie and Gary. And Corazon Cabinets. These are great local businesses you should be doing business with. We welcome your calls to the Imus Wilkinson Asset. I can't get my sponsor straight here today. We welcome your calls.
Any of the words is good.
To the Imus Wilkinson Investment Asset Management Live Line at 790-2040. Eb, you might consider shortening the name of your company
just to accommodate me.
Talk with the other half of your group and see how they want. You may just take out the Imus part. It just be the Wilkinson Investment Group.
Oh yeah, that's going to go over real well. I can see how that ends.
I can just see the look on Gary's face.
Yeah. Hey, what the hell?
Oh, God. Okay, well, let's get to it. I have many times said when a critical event or major victory or loss occurs, it is best to be humble in victory and gracious in defeat. I will allow others to beat their chests from both sides what the Mueller report means, but I'll just say that, thankfully, the 660-day-plus Mueller report has finally been submitted to the Attorney General. That's Bill Barr. No one outside the DOJ has any real idea what is in his report this afternoon, except the key information that there are to be no further indictments or charges. We also know that those individuals charged and some found guilty who were associated with the 2016 campaign were charged not with any collusion, but with unrelated charges such as tax evasion, fraud, false witness, and other process crimes. And none of them was a part of the campaign for much of a time at all. What we don't know is how the president or those close to him are going to be treated with charges that fall short of a criminal indictment. And we probably never will know and should not know anything about that information which was found out on these innocent people who were not charged with any crimes. Luckily, this is also Department of Justice policy. We'll see how the leaks occur or not. We also may never know why Robert Mueller decided to assign 100% all partisan Democrat prosecutors to his staff. Or why, in the face of what are extraordinary factors associated to the events which occurred during the presidential election, such as spying on the campaign, using an unverified dossier to get several FISA court warrants to eavesdrop on the campaign, failure to look at the actions of Hillary Clinton or any of her associates, or the actions of James Comey, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, or those who destroyed electronic devices for Mrs. Clinton? Why did the special counsel not open his investigation to any of these potential crimes? Now that the report is in, I hope the Justice Department will take action to prevent the use of the FBI and the Department of Justice as a weapon in future campaigns, because that is where it appears there may have been the strongest link to collusion. That's what's on my mind. And like I said, we invite your calls to the Imus Wilkinson Asset Management Investment Investment Line.
The Imus Wilkinson Hotline.
Okay. Hey, we have George Bardmesser, our first guest, is waiting on the line. Let's go ahead and take George before we go to our commercials. John, can you plug him in? All right. George, are you with us?
I'm here.
Great. George Bardmesser, lawyer and contributor, columnist with The Federalist, whose op-ed from March 13th in support of President Trump has over 1.3 million shares on Facebook, including me a couple times. Pretty incredible. George Bardmesser is an intellectual property attorney specializing in the preparation and prosecution of patent applications in fields of software, business methods, electrical, optical, and mechanical inventions. Mr. Bardmesser gained valuable technical experience while working in private industry as an engineer and technical marketing supervisor. He is the sole inventor of 4 U.S. patents. Mr. Bardmesser is fluent in Russian. George, welcome to Inside Track. I see from your bio you are fluent in Russian. I think you were born there. Are you mentioned anywhere in the Mueller report?
Am I what, sorry?
Are you mentioned in the Mueller report anywhere?
Not to my knowledge. At least I haven't been interviewed yet. I mean, I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and he apparently, you know, is keen on ignoring me. I don't know what the deal is with that.
Well, you're right. I don't think you're going to be there. At least you're not going to be charged with any crimes, according to the Attorney General.
I would love to collude. I mean, you know, if I could collude with somebody, I would, but, what can I say?
George, you described yourself in this March 13th Federalist op-ed as a middle-of-the-road Republican, and you were queasy, you said, about voting for Donald Trump. He wasn't even your fourth choice. Is that right, and why?
First of all, he didn't announce, as I recall, until about June. And, of course, most of the other guys were running well before then.
Yeah.
I consider myself a middle-of-the-road Republican, as I said. I mean, I'm not a, rabid right-winger. I mean, I'm not, obviously, a left-winger. I mean, probably, like, if you were to define sort of a mainstream, Republican, that would be me. I mean, now, as far as why Trump was not my first choice or second or third, Trump, I'm not sure that I considered Trump a Republican, actually, early on, back in 2015. Looking at the field, it seemed like there were plenty of other good candidates, like Walker, if you recall, Rubio, even, you could consider. I mean, Bush, Jeb Bush, at least he looked reasonable at that point. I mean, as it turned out, they all, flamed out. I mean, most of them.
Yes, he did.
You couldn't go the distance we know now. I mean, of course, we couldn't know then. There was that factor. I mean, the other factor was that I wasn't sure Trump could win early on. I mean, totally as time went on and, he came to, dominate the Republican field, that it was clear that he was sort of the guy to go the distance, if anybody could. Here we are. I mean, towards the end of the, as the election was approaching, I mean, I think like almost every Republican voter, I mean, I was certainly well aware of Trump's, flaws and his faults. I mean, if anybody, Democrats often think that Republicans are blind to Trump's, weaknesses, let's say, or flaws. We're not. I mean, I'm sure everyone who voted for Trump, or almost everyone, is well aware that he's hardly perfect. Like everybody else, he's got issues. But the question was, are these issues enough to make you vote for Hillary? And the vote for Hillary was simply not acceptable. It just is, you know, no way, no how, never, ever, ever, never.
George, okay. we're gonna take a couple of commercial breaks here, and okay. when we come back, we're gonna find out why you're locked, cocked, and ready to rock in the voting booth in the 2020 presidential election. We'll be right back with Inside Track. This is KVOI. Welcome back to Inside Track. We're on with George Bardmesser, a contributor to The Federalist. George, you wrote, every time one of these newly minted Democrat stars opens their mouth, the same thought goes through my mind. Thank God for Trump. Trump is the last line of defense. Trump is the only thing that stands between me and these hallucinogenic socialist nut jobs. Trump is what's keeping chaos and left-wing insanity at bay. You're a pretty good writer. I love your rhetoric, man. I think if you were to talk with the average conservative voter in the street, he or she would be saying exactly the same thing. You've really got the essence.
Well, I suspect so. You know, it's actually pretty amazing how many comments, how many shares, and how many emails I got from people, even though I didn't actually put my email in the, you know, in the article there. So, I'm not hiding from anybody, but to email me, you have to go on Google, you know, like do a search.
Like me.
Exactly. So it takes a minimum effort to do that. But, many, many, many people emailed me and said the same thing. Why do I say that? The stuff coming from the other side, the Democrats, is so out beyond the edge of the universe. You know, it's like fall off the end of the world kind of thing. It's so loony, so crazy, but it somehow it's taking on reality. It feels sometimes like when you look at all this, when you look at every candidate on the other side, it's sort of they're competing with each other to own crazy. You know, who can go crazier? Who can abolish the Electoral College? Who can abolish circumcision? Who can abolish?
Yeah, I forgot circumcision and Electoral College. were the big issues in 2020. I guess I was missing something.
Oh yeah, it's a big debate among Democrats. I mean, this fellow Andrew Yang, whoever the hell he is, but apparently he's a semi-serious candidate there. He's got lots of. I mean, everyone is for abolishing the Electoral College. Everyone is now for the Green New Deal. Everyone, I mean, like the crazy stuff is. Trump is the only sane person in the room. I mean, I support Trump because he has delivered.
Yeah,
no question about that.
I think, yeah.
But even aside from that, you know, we've got the loonbags, the nutters. And they're somehow serious candidates. I mean, it's, remember that movie, The Perfect Storm?
Yeah.
Where that boat that sank off the Massachusetts. And, like, towards the end, there's a scene where this gigantic monster wave is building up. It's kind of like slowly coming at you. And, it's building up, and the boat is kind of rising. And, what's going to happen. It's going to flip over, right? But sometimes kind of looking at all this, you know, insanity feels like that this left-wing craziness is just building up like this vast wave about to overwhelm us. And the only thing, I mean, I don't know that Trump really thinks in these terms, you know. I mean, I don't think he's a philosopher king. He's not a...
Probably not.
Deep,
I think you pegged him good.
Yeah. So that's sort of, I mean, that article that I wrote, that essay, is really sort of a cry of the heart, so to speak. It's not... I mean, I'm not a politician. You know, I'm not a, you know, member of the Trump administration. Maybe
There's nothing politically correct about what you said. And speaking about not politically correct, we have Sean on the call on the phone with a question for George. Sean, go ahead. Make it brief. We got four minutes left here.
Oh, I will, George. I appreciate your time. And unfortunately, Bruce, to thank God for a politician. It's an offense against everything I've ever read in the Bible. So I'll just start with that. But, George, I got to ask you something, because me and a friend of mine were talking about, I'm also on the radio on KVY, local news and talk, this thing that goes on radio and what Bruce does on his show and what I do on my show, I want to talk more philosophically about radio. When we do a radio show, do you think, even though it's on the public airwaves, do you think that's our property, and that would be Bruce Ash or Sean Hotline, is that our property? Is it public property? Is it governed by, I don't know, the people that you people elect? How do we define that when we go in a radio station? Whose property is that intellectual contact?
Well, the content belongs to the people, presumably to the radio station. The radio frequency, I guess, belongs to the, all of us, and derivatively through that to the government. But the content, yeah, it belongs to whoever creates it.
That was all. I don't know why we had this conversation about whose content when you walk in the station, even though, and Bruce, you understand, I'm an invited guest at KBOI. I understand that's another person's property. But the content created is really starting to fascinate me. Whose content is that when it goes out on what we call, we're all stupid, we all went to public schools, we call it the public airwaves, all owned by the FCC. I'm trying to figure out who actually owns that content.
Well, Sean, this is Eb. The content is yours. The distribution is the station's, because without the station, the distribution wouldn't exist.
Brilliant.
All right, Sean, I want to thank you for your call. I want to move on, though. I need to make sure that I get to this next comment from George, which I think was great. On sundry scandals that don't bother me, you wrote, "I am vomit-inducingly sick of Russia-Mueller collusion. I am sick of Russia. I am sick of Mueller. I am sick of Comey, Rosenstein, Orr, McCabe, Yates, Stroke, Page, Baker, and the rest of that gang." Well, first of all, how do you really feel about them? And secondly, what do you think about the report that we had turned in yesterday so far from Mueller with no indictments?
Well, we haven't seen the report yet, of course, but I'm guessing the reason that Nancy Pelosi ran up the white flag is because she knows what's in it, or she knows what's not in it, which is nothing. There's nothing there. And it was, I mean, I can tell you as somebody who was born in Russia, okay, every Russian just like laughs hysterically at the notion that, Putin somehow influenced the election or colluded with Trump. I mean, it's just an absurd notion. It's beyond absurd. Now, as far as the investigation, why am I vomit-inducingly sick of it? For exactly that reason. There's nothing there. It's just tiring. I mean, they've been at it now for 3 years, okay? So first the FBI started, I think, in June, investigating. And then it was Mueller and these endless indictments of John Doe's. There's still about 140 million people in Russia who haven't been indicted by Mueller. Okay, so he's got a ways to go if he really wants to keep going.
So it just
doesn't add up to anything. It's just a distraction. It's on a more serious level, it's really an attempt at a coup. It's an attempt to weaponize these investigations. It's an attempt to weaponize the Department of Justice, the FBI, the intelligence gathering apparatus, the national security apparatus, to overturn an election. I mean, if you really want to put it in serious terms. I mean, I try to kind of be a little humorous in my article, but, it's not a humorous issue. I mean, we've witnessed, really, an attempt by the national security state to subvert an election. That's what really it's all about.
You wrote, "The Donkey Party has a new leader, someone called Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Every time her bright red lips form a sentence, I hear a clarion call, 'Must vote for Trump, must vote for Trump.' You say, 'Unlike AOC, I actually know firsthand what socialism is. I don't need to imagine the future that AOC is trying to shove down my throat. I lived in that future and pray that I'll never have to live in that future again.'" You really do know what this thing called socialism is, because everybody's standing in line for the few commodities and everybody's waiting for a handout from the government and everybody's dependent upon the government. How do you feel about OAC, as she is called?
Well, believe it or not, I actually just wrote another piece for the Federalist about our new friend AOC, and I feel very positively about her. I think she's a gift. The more she talks, the more the Republicans will benefit, because what she says is just, well, first of all, she's an utter moron. Can I say that word on the radio? Moron?
Yes, yes, you can.
Okay. We did not beep that.
What's that?
We did not beep that.
Okay, yeah. So that's ultimately who she is. I mean, she doesn't understand what she says. I don't think she knows how to read, really, beyond just slogans. I mean, she can probably understand the letters on the page. I mean, she can kind of do that. But the concepts, no. I don't think she knows how to actually read things. But she is a gift, okay? She truly is a gift that keeps on giving. I hope we see a lot of her. I hope we see more of her. I mean, I hope we see her on TV all the time, on cable all the time, on social networks all the time, because every time she talks, she reminds people that, you know, this is just loony. This is nuts, okay? Funny how many ways are there to say that, okay? So now, she actually has sort of an interesting image, okay, as a like a hyper-sexualized congresswoman. I mean, you know, most congresswomen and men, they choose kind of a more serious look. Right. Now, she presents herself as sort of the sex doll, if you will, of Congress, who claims to have, you know, ideas, okay, in quotes, ideas. So that's AOC. That's how I feel about it. Now, you know, do I feel negatively or positively about her? I suppose both. I mean, I don't want to call them ideas because they're really not ideas. They're just sort of collections of brainless mishmash. What she's proposing. But as far as her role in our political system, I think she will be a great positive because she will definitely help, you know, Trump get reelected. She will probably help quite a few Republican congressmen get elected or reelected.
Well, George, that's gonna about do it for today. I invite everybody, go to The Federalist online, The Federalist. Look up George. The article he just wrote about AOC is fabulous. I'll leave you with one quote. He wrote about Joe Biden in the March 13th piece. Biden, the creepy old guy who likes to massage women and 13-year-old girls in public. That guy? I have a 19-year-old daughter. I don't want him anywhere close to. He feels like he's been running for a president for every election since Eisenhower. Can he lurch far enough to the left this time to satisfy the woke police? I doubt it, but it should be fun watching him try. George Barbesser, thanks very much. Keep writing, and I hope you'll come back on the show again with us soon. You're awesome. You're saying what lots of people are thinking. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. We're going to go ahead and take some commercial messages. We'll be right back with Anson Chan on Inside Track. Welcome back to Inside Track, sponsored by Corazon Cabinets, your locally owned source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets at wholesale prices. Call Corazon Cabinets and schedule a visit to the showroom. Big doings at Corazon. Kim Joy and Rochelle are planning a special one-year anniversary event the entire week of April 16th. And right after that, a big sale, a flea market sale with the best values on quality kitchen and bath cabinets. Call 488-2266 and let them know you heard this ad on Inside Track. Get an additional 5% discount on Corazon's already low wholesale prices. You will be amazed by the great styles and super low prices. I am so proud to introduce Anson Chan, first local to have served as the Chief Secretary of Colonial Hong Kong. She also acted as Governor of Hong Kong, previously served as Chief Secretary for Administration, as well as elected Legislative Counselor of Hong Kong. Mrs. Chan launched a group called Hong Kong 2020 on the basis of the former core group to monitor and comment on the constitutional reform progress to achieve full universal suffrage for election of the chief executive in 2017 and all members of the Legislative Council by 2020. And also calling us from his home in Oregon, is Solomon Yu, Republican member of the RNC. Glad both of you could join us. Anselm, thank you so much. I know you had quite an exciting day yesterday in Washington, D.C.
Well, a pleasure to be on your program. Yes, I did. I had a brief meeting with the Vice President, Mr. Pence. He is clearly very interested in one country, two systems, and asked particularly about the exercise of basic rights and freedoms, including religious freedom. And I was in the happy position of being able to reassure him that we continue to enjoy these freedoms, which set Hong Kong apart from the rest of China.
You're making news across the world, but I'd like you to speak, please, about the importance of the U.S.-Hong Kong bilateral relationship, and if you could, in the context of U.S.-Hong Kong Policy Act.
Yes. We enjoy a special relationship with the United States under the U.S.-Hong Kong Policy Act, which was enacted by Congress in 1992 to recognize that although we are now a part of China, we are like no other Chinese city. For example, we can worship freely. We have the rule of law and independent judiciary. In Hong Kong, we can still every year carry out a candlelight vigil to commemorate the 1989 Tiananmen incident. So we are very, very different from the rest of China. And it is on the basis of the health of one country, two systems that the United States government gives Hong Kong special treatment in trade, in commerce and finance, export controls, cultural, scientific, and academic exchanges. We cooperate very fully with your government on law enforcement, particularly stopping the flow of contraband, combating human trafficking, money laundering, etc. So in this latest report on the state of the U.S.-Hong Kong Policy Act, the administration has reaffirmed that Hong Kong continues to be a very important and valued partner to the United States.
That is tremendous news, and probably everyone in China, at least in the government, is aware of what just happened.
I hope so, because this relationship is important not just to the United States and to Hong Kong, but I think important to the rest of China, particularly in the context of the very ambitious plans that Beijing has to develop the Greater Bay Area and the Belt and Road scheme. We can leverage on our very unique strengths to make a unique contribution to these two very ambitious projects. But we can only do so if we retain our basic rights and freedoms, remain a free port, and embrace the values that universally the world embraces and which we hope one day we will see in our own country.
Anson, can you explain the one country, two systems concept? It's what sets Hong Kong apart from the rest of mainland China. What does that mean for everyday life?
Yes. Well, it was a concept crafted by Deng Xiaoping in the mid-1970s to provide reassurance not only to Hong Kong people but to the rest of the world that after reversion of sovereignty in 1997, Hong Kong will be able to continue to keep its lifestyle, its core values, particularly the rule of law, independent judiciary, and the squeaky clean civil service. And under this system, as I pointed out, we are able to negotiate our own trade agreements. We have a freely convertible currency of our own. We do not have to use the renminbi. We can conclude bilateral agreements with many countries. And these are what set Hong Kong apart. So two systems, although we are part of one country, two systems is a very, very important concept. And we have to retain this if we are going to remain China's premier financial and services center, which we are.
Anson, this is Eb Wilkinson. I was in Hong Kong in 1996. I wanted to make sure I got there before the handover. So it's hard to believe that it's 22 years since that handover. Is the concept working well, and what specific concerns do you have about it?
Well, in general, working well, but cracks have started to appear in two systems. We're particularly concerned at increasing interference from Beijing in matters that should belong to the chief executive and her team. We are particularly concerned at the restriction on political freedoms. For example, who has the right to stand for election? We still do not have universal suffrage, despite the fact that it was promised in our constitution, the basic law, which was passed by the National People's Congress in Beijing. These are very worrying signs because if they continue, they will undermine the very concept of two systems. And if nothing else, it may lead to the United States government reconsidering whether the basis upon which they grant Hong Kong special treatment still stands.
Can you expand on the universal suffrage?
Universal suffrage, well, in a sophisticated, you know, cosmopolitan city like Hong Kong, most people would think that these permanent Hong Kong residents in Hong Kong enjoy the freedom of electing our own chief executive and all members of our legislature. No, we do not. Our chief executive is elected by a small election committee of under 2,000. Despite the fact that the qualified constituency is about 3.4 million people. For example, I don't have the right to vote for my chief executive. And only half the members of our legislature are returned on the basis of one man, one vote. Now, in our constitution, Beijing promised that 10 years after the reversion of sovereignty, the people of Hong Kong can decide how fast to move towards universal suffrage. Well, here we are, 22 years after the handover, and the goal seems to be receding further and further into the future. In my view, you can only have credible, effective governance if the chief executive is properly and popularly elected. That will give her the legitimacy which she does not have at the moment.
So I've traveled to Hong Kong myself a couple times in the last 4 years or so with Mr. Yu, who is on the line with us. And the thing that struck me was that this was the greatest city in the world I've ever visited. The way that it works, the buildings, the scale, everything. I mean, it made New York City really pale in comparison.
It still is, but it could be much better.
No, I understand. So what is everyday life? How is it influenced by the PRC looking over everyone's shoulder and really calling the shots?
Well, for the ordinary men in the street, if you are not caught up in the political wrangles and you keep your head down, I suppose they would conclude that life continues as usual. But for the majority, particularly for our younger generation, they see a very bleak future. Some of these young social activists have been barred from standing for election. Some who were popularly elected have been disqualified. These are not good signals for our younger generation. On top of that, there are a whole host of social problems facing the young. For example, the unaffordability of housing. And the younger generation is our future. And we need to give them some hope. We need to support them. But it's a good thing, I think, in Hong Kong that we still have young activists who have the courage of their convictions and who's prepared to stand up and express their views. But for those in elected office, I think they frequently face criticisms. In Hong Kong, it's become fashionable to label people either as patriots supporting in Beijing or as the opposition who badmouth Hong Kong.
Anson,
social harmony.
Anson, yes. We need to take a quick break for a few messages from our sponsors. So let's halt there. We'll come right back in a couple of minutes, and we'll go to the top of the hour with you. You're listening to Anson Chang and Solomon Yu on Inside Track. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash, Eb Wilkinson on the line with Anson Chan from Hong Kong, talking to us from D.C., and Solomon Yu, Republican National Committeeman from Oregon. Anson, with some of the issues concerning Hong Kong today, do you have a concern for your own personal safety?
No. I know that I'm criticized in certain quarters, but by and large, I can still go about doing what I think I should be doing. So, no, I don't have any fears of my personal safety.
You were honored at Arizona State University last year. You are really one of the most elegant, thoughtful women I've ever met in my life. And
thank you very much.
and you so impressed everybody who was there. You have no idea how proud I was and Solomon was. We were both there with our wives watching you that evening. And
what a compliment.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it was an honor to receive the O'Connor Justice Prize.
Right.
I have great admiration for Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah. Anson, what do you think the way forward is for Hong Kong right now?
Well, I think that Hong Kong people must hold fast to our values because these are what set Hong Kong apart from mainland China. Despite misgivings about China embracing more liberal values, I think Hong Kong remains a beacon for change and change for the better in our country. China is a great nation, but in my view, it can be even greater if its leadership has the confidence to allow its citizens to have basic freedoms, to have respect for human dignity, and to allow its people to worship freely as we can in Hong Kong. In a globalized economy, China's role is going to be increasingly significant, and we do not wish to see tension in its relationship with America. Both these relationships are important. They're important not just for the two countries involved, but they are important for the rest of the world. And so I personally hope that there will soon be an amicable settlement to the current trade dispute that will address concerns on both sides. And I hope, maybe not in my generation, but in my children's generation, that we will see China embracing universal values.
Our other guest on the line has been kind of quiet. We've been focusing on Anson Chan. But Solomon Yu really escaped the communist Chinese regime and came to this country. Solomon, you've done a lot of work in the Far East. You probably agree with Anson's assessment, but being somebody who escaped from there, what's your view today on the way that the Red Chinese have been working their way over these past few years?
Thank you, Bruce. As you and I have a Republicans overseas Hong Kong chapter, and we visit them very, very often. And our chapter members and have expressed the concern they're losing freedom and losing free speech. And you don't lose freedom overnight, and little by little. And pretty soon, one day you walk up and say, oh my God, this is happening here? So that's one of the issues I see. And the other issue is labeling. Anson talked about labeling. I'm very concerned about. During the Cultural Revolution days, I was back in communist China. The minute they label you counter-revolutionary, you're gone. You disappear in the night, and your parents pay for the bullet. And so if a regime start label opposition, call their names, okay? The kind of a name could lead to losing freedom. That should be a concern. And the other thing is the so-called agreement, okay? The mini constitution, they, you know, when UK turned over the sovereignty, Hong Kong to China. And the issue is that supposedly 10 years after turnover, and you should have free elections. Now, I also heard that debate regarding so-called how China view to elect the chief executive officer in Hong Kong. Well, the argument was, we're going to give you three candidates, Communist A, Communist B, and Communist C, and you choose one. That's not free election in anybody's dictionary, right? So the question really boils down to, okay, if China cannot honor its international obligations to UK and to 7.4 million Hong Kongers under this system, so-called one country and two systems, can U.S. still trust China to honor the upcoming U.S.-China trade war ceasefire deal?
So I guess that's a question. That's a question I would pose back to both of you, Anson Chan and Solomon Yu. Do you think that the communist regime can be trusted on trade agreements that we make with them?
Well, I hope that the scenario that Solomon painted will never happen in Hong Kong. I sincerely hope that if an agreement is reached on the trade dispute, that both sides will keep to their word. But at the end of the day, it's about compliance. You need to engage China, but I think the terms of the engagement should be crystal clear, and there needs to be a coherent strategy on how you ensure compliance. But I am reasonably optimistic that over time we will see change in my country. I hope it will be sooner rather than later.
Sure, I think we all do. Solomon, how would the United States be able to compel China to act in accordance with any of the trade agreements that we make with them, whether it be for intellectual properties or whether it be manufactured goods and so on?
We need a mechanism to enforce when the other side can't honor their international obligation, period. That's the delay you see. Supposedly, Trump and Xi Jinping were going to meet in Florida end of month. This is not going to happen. They're going to delay all the way to June. But the enforcement part is so important. We have been watching China's conduct in the international arena. The question is, are they trustworthiness? Are they trustworthy? Okay, and if the answer is no, then we have to have mechanism to enforce the agreement, period.
And we only have about 2 minutes left, but when a regime is persecuting Muslims in their country, literally having concentration camps for them in remote regions of the world, and they can't be trusted on human rights, I think there is a strong question whether or not the Chinese regime can be trusted with something as straightforward as trade.
I think the rest of the world must set up and take note of human rights abuses in China and be prepared to speak up.
Well, that's true. It has had limited effectiveness, and even where you live, Anson, the demonstrations that you've had have been peaceful, but they haven't been without incident and they haven't been without consequence, have they?
No, it's true. But I think we need the world, particularly the business sector, to realize that economic vitality, sustainable economic growth, goes hand in hand with respect for human dignity and basic human rights. You cannot tiptoe around abuses of human rights and still expect that in the longer term China will continue to have strong economic growth, honor its international treaty obligations, etc., etc. But the business sector, cannot turn its blind eye to what's going on under their very nose. But I'm afraid frequently the business sector does not speak up. Right. At the end of the day, we're talking about a clash of ideology and values. And if Americans will not stand up for their values, then they have only themselves to blame if one of these days their values are supplanted by a Communist Party ideology.
Well, friends, we're gonna just about leave it right there. But I want to thank both of you, and particularly you, Anson. You really, for me personally, are a great hero for freedom and for democracy. And your leadership. I mean, the way that the youth movement in Hong Kong has rallied around you is really quite spectacular. So I thank you very much. I thank you both for being on our show. Solomon continues to do great work at the RNC and has had a lot of support and focus in this area. So thank you both.
Indeed. And yeah. Thank you, Bruce.
You
yes.
Bet.
Thank
right.
you, Bruce.
Well, thank you both. Well, friends, please support our great sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these great companies are well-run, local family businesses, and all of their profits stay in Tucson to help our community. I know each of these owners, they love our hometown. They deserve your support. Eb, you and I are going to be off next week. Jim Kelly will come in and pitch hit for us.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, where are you going to be?
Oh, all over Virginia, Maryland, Dallas.
All right. Well, I'll be working in my garden in Coronado, California. So until then, for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash. Good afternoon.